Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to my show. I am Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and this is the place I like to bring topics I find that others are experiencing and may wish for a frank discussion of tips and solutions to improve and inspire their lives. We have a full range of topics, from health and death to dating and cookies, so I'm sure you may find something of interest to listen to each day. I grew up asking why in all areas of my life, and it is something I still live by today. My guests and I talk about a topic in casual conversation so you, the listener, can feel like you are across the table from us with a coffee or tea. I welcome you, the listeners, and I hope to answer some of your questions as I speak with the guest of the day. If you would like to call into the show, I welcome you to dial 424-258-9318, then push 1 so I can see you wish to speak on the show. My show page will also have information about what I will be touching on next and where my next show is, so I would encourage you to follow my show page. So now it's time to share with you and start the show. And welcome. Every day, I try to share with you a company I recently found that helps me increase my intake of vitamins or nutrients or supplements. And today we are speaking about my intake of omega-3, 6, and 9 oils without shellfish or seafood origin. And that's very important for me. I don't know if everybody has seen the recent report about increasing omegas oils in your diet will help with your brain function and prevent a lot of these medical conditions that seem to be stemming from inactivity or inappropriate activity in our brain cells. The company is ImmunoViva. It's a seed oil company in the northern U.S. We know the seeds of fruits and vegetables are nature's perfect defense system. Their powerful antioxidants protect the plant's DNA from environmental stresses, bacteria, fungal disease, and also the same thing that those seeds do for the plants is the same thing that those seeds and plants do for us as humans. So ImmunoViva has found a way to harness the full potential of those seeds and deliver it to you in supplements, powders, and oils that are nutrient-dense without fillers, mystery ingredients, and questionable potency in the product you are using daily. And I think that that's very important, because how many times have you ever turned over a package of something that you would purchase in a grocery store or a chain drugstore, and you have no idea what that stuff is even in there? You might be looking at buying some vitamin C, and there's 10 other things in there that you don't even know what they are. The raw ingredients in ImmunoViva are literally the seeds of nature. That is what they are. And they are processed in their purest form, so they retain much more of their natural power. The results, some of the most powerful antioxidant activity on the market today, and it provides natural power for immune support. That is extremely important, because everybody's clamoring for antioxidants. They think they're getting them in their food, and they're getting them in powders and drinks, and even they tack on the word antioxidants on a bottle of soda these days. You know, and then you wonder, is that really in there? ImmunoViva is the most dense form you could possibly get. Blueberries, cranberries, raspberries, pomegranates, and grapes, they're all naturally high in antioxidants, but their seeds are where the real power is. I have found powerful and comprehensive immune support, heart support. It's called ImmunoViva's flagship product, and it's called Core. Core is made from cold-pressed black cumin and black raspberry seeds. They are loaded with antioxidants. They are rich in omega-3 and 6 fatty acids, and it actually has several different types of antioxidants, including multiple types of vitamin E. How many times can you get that? Everybody's looking for which vitamins. Well, I want an E, I want a C, I want an A. Well, everybody's picking and choosing, but all of these things in nature come in together and they all coexist. So about Bacor, how powerful is it? It takes 16 pounds of raspberries to get just 1 teaspoon of seed oil. I wonder how many of those 16 pounds of raspberries you can eat in one day. Would you rather just take 1 teaspoon of seed oil? I know that's what I do. Core is truly an amazing product, and if you have any issues with your joints or would like to move better without strain and pain and movement, I would check out their product called Ease. I take both every day, and I would suggest you give them a try. They have specials on their website. Their pricing is not over the roof. It is something you can take every day and fit it into your budget. Their website is immunoviva.com, and you can find more information there. If you'd like to find out more about their products, you can also check out a archived session I did with the owner of ImmunoViva. It is on my show page. You just look for the words ImmunoViva. So today my guest is Michelle Neff Hernandez, and she is the founding president and executive director of a Soaring Spirits Lost Foundation. Soaring Spirits is a nonprofit organization. They are committed to providing resources and support for people grieving the loss of a loved one. You know, life is just not as easy these days, and so many things are going on. We get wrapped up in our life, and then something happens, and it just seems to throw us into a kilter where, you know, you may not only just lose one person, you may, in your grief process, be so deep into it that you may also lose your sense of your life. So Michelle is here to speak to us today about a lot of their projects that she has going on. They also have a Widowed Pen Pal program. She also has Camp Widow and a widowsbond.com. So welcome to the show today, Michelle. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
You know, there's so much going on these days. I find that when people experience a loss, it seems to have so many things going around it that you just can't even figure out. You know, you don't pay attention to the person actually passing, or you have so much drama going on. You know, we talk about this all the time, and everybody feels a sense of loss. So can you tell us even how you even started with this and how it grew into be such, you know, so important?
Well, I have to start by telling you that I feel like that loss of sense of self is a really normal part of grieving the loss of someone who's instrumental in your life. You know, as you said, it sort of sets your world on its side,
right,
and everything feels out of sorts. My husband died when I was 35 years old. He was hit from behind by a car while he was riding his bicycle. And so I was sort of catapulted into the experience of being a widow, first of all. And at 35 and with no friends or family who had lost a spouse or life partner at mm-hmm. any point in my life, I didn't know anybody who had lived that experience, making it all the more isolating because I didn't have any frame of reference for the experience of someone who'd lost a spouse or life partner, except for much older members of my family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was 35. I had 3 kids living at home. And I thought to myself, you know, this is good. I could live to be 80. You know, this is
right.
This is a long time ahead of me to try to figure out what I'm supposed to do with myself now. So the experience of sort of losing my sense of self, it, you know, really strikes a chord with me because I definitely did, which was a little disconcerting because I had always, to that point, felt that my self-identity was not wrapped up in my marital status. I would have, you know, really thought that was an odd concept at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Until it happened to me, and then
right.
And then I realized how much our roles in our life play in how we see our future. You know, so losing a pivotal role, that of wife, really just wrapped my world up and turned me upside down. I didn't know what to do with myself. And what that led to for me personally was seeking out other widowed people. You know, after a period of time of wondering, you know, what did people do with their, how long do you wear your wedding ring? I felt very married, but I realized that I was no longer married. But how long do you keep that symbol? And if you take it off, what do you do with it? Whether or not people slept in their same beds, in their same rooms, on the same side of the bed, these are the kind of questions that were really things I wished I could talk to someone about, because I didn't know what other people did. I didn't even necessarily want them to tell me how to do it, just I wanted to hear that other people were also wondering these same sort of things.
You know, I think there's so much comfort in listening to someone who has been there also. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your loss was so sudden.
Yeah.
That it's not something you could have expected or planned for.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And we always talk about being prepared for things. And I just think that that's something you can't be prepared all
right.
the time for. But there are times where you can have conversations around
right.
that possibility.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, we were both very young. He was 39, I was 35. And some of the conversations that we had happened to touch on being, you know, what we would want if we were to die. And so he told me that he wanted to be cremated, and he was very adamant about it. And I was so grateful just for that one tidbit of information, because that was one question I didn't personally have to answer. That the thing that is sort of shocking, you know, amongst the many shocking parts of his death, but one of the things is that you just don't think about what it's like to plan a funeral. You know, I didn't
right.
have the first clue. Who do you call
mm-hmm.
first? You know, I didn't have any of the answers to those sort of questions, and you wouldn't necessarily unless you'd been there or you'd had some part in another funeral, but I had no concept of what I was supposed to do first, second, third, and in addition to that, I was a mess. And so even just having one small tidbit of information about what he wanted really did make a difference to me being able to feel confident about making that choice. And I'll be honest, I had a hard time with it because emotionally the idea was that I was going to be burning him up. And
right.
I don't know that I could have done it without his voice in my head telling me specifically that's what I knew that's what he wanted. I had no doubt that's what he wanted. You know, and I don't know that anything else would have been easier. I just know that I really would have struggled. And I even did struggle with as much information as I had. And so those conversations that we do avoid because, you know, that we want to not think about death, I think sometimes people feel as if they talk about it too much in advance, you know, they somehow are bringing that about or putting that intention out. But I'll tell you what, it's such a gift to the people who are left behind to have some sense of direction in terms of, you know, what to do in the event of your death.
I think so many times when people are afraid of talking about it, they'll make light of it or they'll let it go or
mm-hmm.
they'll pass it off. And like you said, you know, oh, don't put the intention out there. Well, you're not really putting an intention out there. What you're doing is you're helping those feel comfortable, some sort of comfort, rather, after you do have, you know, you do pass on. And by letting them know that, it seems to ease a lot of their, people seem, you know, when someone passes, they're like, well, I should have done this or I should have done that. And their increase in guilt seems to control a lot of their lives afterward. Or what if I didn't do that right? Or, you know, and if that can at least be a little bit lessened in the guilt, maybe then the pain and sorrow, they can get through that, you know, in a much maybe more comforting way, you know?
Well,
you know, I find
think there's things that you can do, you know,
yeah.
to sort of help people along with the grieving process. The reality of it is that it takes as long as it takes, and that
right.
we will go through these periods of time where we feel better, you know, that the weight of the loss is a little less, followed by the next day where it feels like an avalanche on your head. And so,
right.
you know, there's a very normal up and down, which is so difficult to manage. But to be able to have any sort of steps in the direction of help from what the person that you love and are grieving wanted is helpful. And not only that, I think one of the things that people struggle with is the idea of if we die. You know, they say, well, I don't want
right.
to talk about the if. Well, the reality is it's when. And so
right.
if we can just come to grips with the reality that it is when, and that no matter if it was tomorrow or if it's 50 years from now, there still is going to be the eventuality, and there still is going to be someone. You know, hopefully we're all blessed with someone who loved us so much that they're grieving our loss. And I think that's the other reality, is that great love and great loss walk hand in hand. You love someone who is going to die. Anyone alive or anything alive is going to die. And so we live that. We all live that. It's just a matter of how that plays out in each of our lives.
You know, recently I had worked with a client, and she was having some sense that things were not going down the great path, and maybe she wasn't going to get better and be able to go out and run around the block like she used to. And when we talked about it, she started to say, well, you know, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure. I don't know what's going to happen. And I had to explain that we don't always know what's going to happen. It will just be in its own time. And I asked her what would be her one thing that her dream would be right now that she would feel that maybe would make her feel better about where she was going in life. And she said she would like to check about a heart transplant doctor because she felt that her heart was overused. It wasn't going to get better, and she knew that. So she figured, well, if it's broken that bad, let's see about fixing it with another new one. And as we left that doctor appointment, the doctor looked at her and said, I would suggest you enjoy today. Hmm. And that stuck in our head so much that instantly I clicked out of the mode of when, it would be soon,
mm-hmm.
and she clicked into the mode, okay, I'm not getting better. And as we left that doctor's appointment, we went straight out and we drove past all of the places she used to live,
mm-hmm.
and the restaurants and the places she used to go to hang out, and we talked about all of those places for hours on end that day. And the next day, she did go in the hospital, and she did pass away within that week. But
wow.
she had known, in her sense, that this was getting to be the end. And as she left the doctor, she says, am I going to die today? I said, not today. Not today.
Mm.
And then we just enjoyed that day. But then the next
yeah.
day, things did go down. But that was wonderful for her because her family, as the week prior, we had prepared.
Right.
What are you going to do? Are you going to collect all your paper information? Even that one day, I had said to her, I looked through her five wishes papers, and she hadn't signed it. I said, you know, you need to sign this. You filled it all out, but you didn't sign it. So she scribbled her signature there, and we went on with the day. So all of those little things in play had so helped herself and her family through that process that on the day that she was almost going to pass away. She was very, very ill that day. She had just come out of ICU. They had a party with balloons and all this other stuff, and they had a real party and celebrated. They had everybody packed in the house they could. But the day that she passed, the family was just felt, you know, they had done everything prior. They had done everything they possibly could. And she was at peace, and they really felt at peace also.
Yeah.
You know, so, and all, I mean, while your loss was sudden, but there's also these other losses that if you have a little bit of window of opportunity ahead of time, maybe not going into grief beforehand, maybe going into preparation ahead of time might help everyone.
Well, and I think that sometimes it does. I think the only caveat I would add to that is that, you know, as much as we'd like to be prepared for what it's like to grieve the loss of someone we love,
right.
We really can't until the day that they are no longer able to be touched or talked to,
right.
even if they're non-responsive, even, you know, I've talked to so many, in my work with Soaring Spirits, I've had the opportunity to speak with thousands of widowed people, and so many of the people who have had the opportunity to prepare, particularly if they're fighting cancer, and many of them, if they're fighting cancer at a young age, they spend so much time working on being hopeful and hoping that they will have find a cure, or that whatever treatment they're working on at the moment will prove to be the one, that they often don't do what most people would think they would do, say their goodbyes, finish things up, really try to prepare for what the next stage is. But because they spend so much time really focused on hoping to beat this thing, they often skip right through that. Not to say that they don't do what they can do to be financially and legally prepared, but mentally and emotionally prepared are sort of a whole other animal. And as much as, you know, and that's why, in some sense, any opportunity you have to talk about what you would want in a non-emotional preparatory way is helpful, because you have that information at a time when we're not talking about your imminent death. And, you know, that imminent death, however prepared you may be for the absence of the person who's dying, you still have the reality to face when you wake up the next morning and they're not wherever they are, whether that's in the house or at the home or in the hospital, because that's when your journey begins into the after of, you know, your life with that person. And for many widowed people specifically, but anyone grieving the loss of someone they love, that day after is really when their personal journey with grief begins. And that is such a pivotal, changing, you know, it's a life-changing moment, really.
Can you tell us how you began with Soaring Spirits and the type of programs that you have to help support others?
Soaring Spirits began from that moment I talked about where I couldn't find any other widowed people my age. I really wanted to ask those practical questions about widowhood. I read a lot about the stages of grief, but I was struggling with the fact that they're not linear. And after some research, you know, I realized they were never really intended to be linear, but more a sort of description of the stages that are things that are commonly visited. However, I really wanted to know some of the basics. I wanted to know whether people put more pictures up after their loved one died, or if they took them down. You know, a variety of really practical in-the-moment questions. So I came up with 50 questions, and I decided I was going to start interviewing other widowed people because I figured they would be the ones who would have the answers to the questions. And by interviewing many people, then I thought I would have the opportunity to hear a variety of opinions, with the intention of writing it into a book. And so I traveled the country the first year after Phil died, interviewing 30 other widows. I interviewed only women initially. And the concept was to find out, you know, to ask them these 50 questions. And every time I went to a home, I went always to their home, and we sat in their living rooms and had these conversations. And every time I sat down with someone, I came out feeling like I had just made a new friend who uniquely understood me. And after doing that 30 times, I thought, you know, how great would it be if I could bring these 30 women together? I would love to have these 30 women together. And then from that stemmed the idea, what if I created a community of widowed people? What would that look like? And so from that idea stemmed the Camp Widow program, which is a weekend-long event held on both coasts, one on the East Coast, which will be this 2013, will be April 19th to the 21st, and then on the West Coast in San Diego from June 28th to the 30th. And the concept for Camp Widow is to help widowed people deal with the question of what next. You know, who am I now? How has this loss changed my life? What have I learned from my loss, and what is my next stage of my life going to look like? So we provide a variety of workshops kind of geared around those concepts, and we also have a good time. The idea is really for it to be a fun weekend where we laugh, where we support each other, where the thing that usually in conversation or in community makes you different than everyone else, being that you're widowed, is actually the thing that you have in common with everyone else around you when you're at Camp Widow. It's a uniquely powerful moment when you realize that everybody here is also trying to work out their next steps. So we have two, like I said, two events, one on each coast, and they happen once a year, so they're annual events. And we've served over 600 campers since our inception. This year will be our fifth year, so we're excited about celebrating our fifth anniversary. And we will be celebrating the fifth year of Soaring Spirits as well in 2013. That's our in-person event.
You have done an awful lot of work in 5 years. And
know, it's been amazing. It's been an amazing journey. And I tell people so often, what this opportunity to lead this unique community has done for me is, it's been such a beautiful opportunity to be a part of so many people's tomorrow. And when you are initially in those very first stages of dark, dark grief, you just think that tomorrow doesn't matter. You feel so hopeless. And to be able to provide those people in the most hopeless time of their lives with the glimmer of hope that tomorrow is eventually going to be something you care about. And not only that, but you're going to take the reins and create your own tomorrow. It's a really amazing gift to be a part of that for other people. It really is. And so, it has been the most challenging work I've ever done in my life, for sure. Running a nonprofit organization is not for the faint of heart.
Yes.
But it has just continually been such a gift to watch widowed people time after time after time find their feet and, go from literally laying on the floor to standing on their two feet and making a difference in their communities and their lives of their friends and families, being able to take care of their children if they have them, and to be confident about that, because, one of the things that I worried about for my own kids was how was this loss going to affect their lives, and, what was that going to look like for them? As a parent, you wish to be able to take away the pain from your kids, and when they're grieving the loss of someone they love, you can't remove that. The only thing you can do is walk with them in it, and that was so hard. And to be able to help widowed parents have the confidence to believe in the resilience of their children and to believe that even though this is hard work, it's not going to mean that their children's lives are going to be forever negatively impacted and only negatively impacted by their loss. Again, just a gift to be a part of that for other widowed people.
Well, I think a lot of people, too, don't know where to turn because so many times it's like, let's go on Facebook and you can put down your loss, or let's go on Twitter and you say how you feel every 2 seconds. But that's really not getting you the responses or the feelings back that so many people are really craving. I know on your website you have what's called Widowed Village, and I really think that is an excellent tool to be able to speak, to say what you're feeling, but to have somebody come back that understands. It's not somebody like, oh, well, let's get over it, or, oh, it's been a year now, or aren't you done with that, or I can bring over you 10 chickens. I mean, things like that it just doesn't correlate to who you are or where you are. And I think potentially Widowed Village, is maybe the first stop place you need to go when you do have a loss.
Widowed Village has been an amazing program. It's not about a year and a half old now. It has over 3,000 members. What I love about the Widowed Village is that's a place that you can go and just speak your truth, whatever it is right now. And there aren't people there who think that you should be done by now, however long by now is.
Right.
There's also people who understand that just because you feel how you feel today doesn't mean that they need to send the wagon out for you, because you may feel completely different tomorrow. It's just a really safe space to be able to speak how you feel and to be able to bounce around the ideas that are going through your head in regards to your own loss. And you know you're going to find other people who are feeling, you know, there's going to be somebody else who's had that feeling, who has, you know, found a way to deal with that feeling in whatever way they have uniquely done it themselves. It is an amazing community. It's set up very similar to Facebook in that you can post to forums, you can post pictures. It's really great because we verify that anyone who applies to the village is widowed before they're approved. So while mm-hmm. Widowed Village is open to Google, you can read it. You can't participate unless or contact anybody within the village unless you are a member. And you can't be a member unless you've been verified by our team as a widowed person. So that's important,
like you said in the beginning, because you need someone that's going to have to experience that. I mean, if you're a person who maybe gets up in the morning and makes coffee, you know, and you're a tea drinker, but your spouse may drink coffee, and you just start automatically every day getting up to make coffee, you're going to be, you know, why am I doing this, making coffee? And you can put that on there and say, I just made coffee, and I don't drink coffee.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's,
have
that's
someone to have
point.
A discussion with.
Yeah, that's such a great point, because there's so many small things, you know. Often people, widowed people especially, and let me take that back. Anyone who's grieving a loss many times thinks that first year they've done everything they can possibly do that's a first. And so there's an expectation that after that first year things are going to get better because mm-hmm. you've done everything the first time. But there's so many things that are small things that are very personal that might not be the first time for whoever knows how long. But for me personally, I went through many of the firsts. Initially, my husband died in August. Of course, the holidays come directly after that, but so did his 40th birthday and my birthday. So I had both our birthdays and all the holidays within 3 months after he died. And so part of my brain was thinking, awesome, I've gotten through all these first things. You know, it was terrible, but at least I did it. And then the first really rainy day came, and every rainy day, he was an air conditioning and heating technician, and so he owned his own business, and when it was raining, obviously he couldn't work, and so he would call me every hour at work and ask me if I was coming home yet. And so, you know, I mean, it was one of the jokes that he would play. He would call me literally every hour, are you coming home yet, are you coming home yet, are you coming home yet? And so the first rainy day I cried the whole day because no one called me to ask me if I was coming home yet, and there was just no way to be prepared for that moment. It didn't even occur to me that that would be a first. And so, like you said about the coffee or tea, you know, the Widowed Village is a place where you can go and say, I made coffee today, or I had my first rainy day and it was horrible. Right. I missed them all day long. And while if you put that on Facebook, you may get, you know, you might get mixed messages, or you may get lots of support, but in the village, you will get people who say, oh my gosh, you know, I also made peanut butter and jelly toast, and I hate peanut butter and jelly, and then I stood there looking at the toast I just made and cried over it because that would have been what he ate for breakfast, or what she ate for breakfast. To be really clear about that, all of our programs are for both men and women, and while the census statistics tell us that 80% of widowed people are women, we do have a good showing of men, and we have been really working to make sure that we provide them with the same level of support. Every program that we have is available for both men and women, and any of the topics, of course, are universal. So,
well, on your website, you also have a newly widowed checklist, you know, some things to consider. Well, while that is great, I think that's probably definitely those are the most important, like, these are the things right now that you need to focus on. So, you know, granted you are going through the process, but there's also things you need to pay attention to, correct?
Well, and part of the reason why we created that checklist as well is because in the early stages of your widowhood, so many people will say, can I help you? And it's difficult sometimes to answer that, you know, question. You don't even know what your name is. So how someone can help you is sometimes a really difficult question to answer. And so for someone who has recently lost a spouse specifically, we created this list because you could give it to a trusted person, a trusted family member, and that family member could help you consider the number of things that are on that list. And one of the things on the list is delegate. You know, we tell people, delegate. If someone says they'll take your kids to school, let them take your kids to school. Because it will help you to, you know, get just take a load off in whatever way you can. Because the reality is, no one can take the grief load off. You know, you have to carry that. But people can help you with the life load. And if you have helpful people in your life who want to be of service, here's some of the ways that they can be of service. And so that checklist is really has a twofold purpose. The first purpose is for widowed people to really think about these things, which the checklist was created by Soaring Spirits and the Liz Loguen Foundation, which is an organization we work with that provides financial grants for families who are raising dependent children and have lost a parent. And so we partnered with them. It was created, this list was created by widowed people, and we just made a list of the things we wish we had known, some things that might have been a little easier had we had that information in advance. And so that's why we created the checklist, hoping that this, and it's available on the Soaring Spirits website, which is sslf.org. It's available on the website under our programs page. It says Newly Widowed Checklist, and it is available as a PDF. We welcome people to download it. The only thing we request is that you let us know that you have. But we made that list particularly to be shared with communities around the country to be able to share that with someone who's newly widowed and have them get the opportunity to really have a solid list of things. And we don't pretend that it's everything you could possibly want to think about, but it's a good starting point.
I think when you don't know where to start, it is a start.
Yeah, for sure. And you certainly don't know where to start so often.
And what I did notice on your website, and I would encourage everyone to check out the website, it is so important. You see everyone laughing. You see a smile on their face.
Yeah.
You see people hugging each other. You see signs of comfort. So you know that comfort is found on those pages.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, really, we also, many widowed people will say, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with a widowed community. That sounds terrible. Because it sounds like it would be very sad, always, you know, dealing with grief, and I can't even deal with my own grief, let alone deal with someone else's grief. And so, you know, the thing about Camp Widow and about any program for Soaring Spirits is that we recognize the loss, but we honor that loss by living our lives. And we really help people make that next step. So, yes, we do have the tears because you can't, you know, we're grieving significant losses. But, you know, you are as likely or more likely to hear laughter at Camp Widow than you are to see tears. And often tears lead to laughter, lead to tears. It's really about living our lives as big as we can in honor of what we have loved and lost. And so we want to show that in photos. And that's why you see so many smiling faces, because we've found a way to sort of work through this together, and that's what this community is really about. And you know, you'll need it for a period of time, but the reality is that your widowed experience will impact you for your whole life, and that doesn't mean it's a negative. It will impact you for your whole life because you'll never forget having lived that experience, having lived through that kind of loss. It changed me as a person, but I am richer and deeper and, you know, way more likely to understand that this moment is not as big as I think it is, you know, because, and at the same time, it's bigger than I think it is, because the things I missed about my husband after he died were, you know, the small things like him calling me on a rainy day.
Mm-hmm.
And so learning to value those small things is also a foundation of what grieving the loss of someone you love so much teaches you.
You know, a lot of times when you think of widowed, you always think of women over 70 with gray hair sitting in a rocking chair. And on your website, you have so many different ages. I mean, from the very young all the way through. So I think that's something definitely to notice is, you know, when you say, we'll try this website and find out information, they're like, well, I'm not an old lady. Well, no one said you were, but you also are still in the process.
Well, and you know, a funny story about that. I was interviewed for a newspaper article a couple of years ago, and the reporter came, and then the photographer came later. And so the photographer met me at my house, and when I came out to meet him on the driveway, he said, "Hi, I'm looking for Michelle." And I said, "Hi, I'm Michelle." And he said, "No, I'm looking for the widowed person."
Right.
Because we have such an ingrained mental image of what, when you say the word widow, what that means. And it doesn't mean a man, and it doesn't generally mean a woman who is under the age of 70. And yet, we have a community that is we've had people join our programs from the age of 17 all the way up until 89. And so we have literally that kind of spread, with the median age really being around 45. So when you think of, you know, the fact that our programs have touched over 1 million people electronically with a median age of 45, that tells you that the idea we have of what a widow person is, what the definition of a widow is not what we think as a community at large. And, you know, one of the things that does for widowed people is really impacts how you think about yourself. If you know, like I said, when I found out, when I realized that the word widow applied to me, I thought, that can't be right. I'm not old enough to be a widow.
Right.
And so, you know, well, one of the things that we hope to do as an organization is put a new face to what the definition of widow is, for that very reason, so that when someone hears of someone else who's been widowed, or when that word applies to them at an age that they would not expect, they understand, because they've seen somehow, they've been introduced somehow to the mission of Soaring Spirits, and they know that there's a community, a huge community, a varied community, a diverse community of people who all are living that same experience.
And you also have the pen pile, which I was very intrigued in finding out more information about, the Widowed Pen Pal site. Because, you know, when people can write something, a lot of people don't even like the computer anymore. You know, if they can sit and write something maybe on a piece of paper and even be able to have a connection with someone personally, you know, we'll draw that even closer. Sometimes, you know, people say, oh, well, I'll put it on Facebook, and you figure putting it out to the world and the world will come back at you. You know, and maybe that's not really what some people are looking for, you know. So a pen pal program is definitely something more intimate and more close-knit.
Yep. And, you know, the thing about the Widowed Pen Pal program is that it is based on a relationship that developed for me around one of my interviews. When I was initially doing the interviews the first year after I was widowed, I was introduced to a woman who's the same age as me. We actually share the same name, and we're the same age. So we both had children. So we began a correspondence that basically my sister asked. She had heard that Michelle had been widowed and wondered if I would write to her. And I thought, I don't know what in the world I'm going to say to her. This is, you know, I'm still trying to figure this out myself. I'm not sure what help I could possibly be. And so basically I sent her a message that said that, and we were pen pals by email, and she responded. And from the moment she responded, we began a constant stream of emails to and fro, all never having met, with the only thing we had in common initially being our widowhood. And we would just pound away on that keyboard and tell each other whatever came into our minds. And we developed, she continues to be my best friend today, you know, because that relationship that began with a grief, you know, turned into living our second chapter of our lives, turned into, you know, just being the best of friends who have had this shared experience and walked with each other through, from the time she was 4 months widowed and I was 6 months widowed when we first started corresponding. And so we walked through a good number of firsts together, and seconds and thirds. And what occurred to me was that if we could develop that kind of a relationship by email, having only one thing really in common, maybe other people could too. And that's where the Widowed Pen Pal program came from. We began by connecting someone. So basically what you do is you go online, you fill in your very basic information, and then you are given three names of three other people who are within 10 years of you in age, who have the same parenting status you do, either do or do not have children, and who were, are within 6 months of you in loss. And so you would get these three names, and then it's up to you to determine, you know, how often you correspond and what those relationships look like. The thing that has been the most gratifying for me is that at Camp Widow, every single camp, we have had at least one pair of pen pals who meet in person for the first time at camp. They decide they're going to go to camp. They both go. They share a room. And they just talk the whole time. And they come to us and they say, I just want you to meet my match. You know, this is the person I was matched with. This is my pen pal. And it's been absolutely incredible to, you know, just to see the relationship that's developed. And the same thing has happened for them, which is that they started out talking about grief, and now they're just talking about life. Life as it's impacted by grief, life as, you know, what's ahead of them. They have these unique relationships, all based on the fact that they filled out a pen pal form and decided that they were going to correspond with each other. So it's always one of my favorite moments when I get to meet a pair of pen pals. And it happens at every single camp that a new set of pen pals comes and introduces themselves. And the fact that it's based on my real-life best friend, it makes it all the better. So,
you know, it sounds so absolutely actually just perfect. You know, because so many times you just, like you said, want to talk to someone else.
Yeah.
But someone else that you can say everything you're thinking and there's no judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And judgment is so free and easy to have judgment anymore these days. Everybody wants to judge everybody for everything, you know.
For sure.
So that you find you can't even be truthfully, you know, 100% truthful, that you find you're holding back, or, well, I'm not going to say that, they might think I'm crazy, or,
yeah,
you know, I said that 100 times and now they're telling me to stop saying it, but I still feel it, so what do I do?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of these connections would really help, you know, through that phase.
Right, and especially because, as you said, for some people, the social media aspect is not something that speaks to them. And so,
or
many people have been burned a little by putting something out there that either there was no response to, or there was, you know, somewhat negative response to. People are very brave behind their keyboards. So it really, to have a connection with one person who you can really talk through the variety of issues and challenges that come up through your process is really, it just develops into this super powerful relationship. Because when you meet someone who's in their dark phase of grief, they're almost as real as they're ever going to be, because you lose your ability to pretend. You lose your ability to wear the mask. And that's why so many people who are grieving end up kind of isolating themselves, because they just feel so vulnerable and so unable to put on a pretend face. You know, there are so many times they just stay home. And having a connection, even though it's by email or by people call on the phone, they write letters. They each have their own unique way of connecting, which I love. But having that other person who kind of can draw you out, even if it's only, you know, by writing, they can draw you out of that shell a little bit and give you a safe space to be able to say whatever it is that you need to say.
You know, it's definitely true about when you're down to your core of who you are also, and all of that other stuff that you thought was important in life, it's kind of difficult when you do have a loss to be able to turn around and someone saying, you know, I can't believe they made a mess of my dress at the dry cleaners. And you're like, do I really care? And how important are you making an emphasis on that? Even the other day, I was speaking with someone. They were saying, oh, I'm really worrying about this. You know, it's going to happen on Saturday. And it was like Monday. I said, so you're going to worry about it from Monday to Saturday? And they're like, well, it's really bothering me. I am worrying about it. I said, but if you stopped worrying right now, can you imagine all the free time you'd have between now and Saturday? You know? So, but when you're speaking with someone who's on that correlated path, it's like all of that nonsense seems to go away.
Yeah, for sure.
And it just doesn't matter.
It does also impact your ability to have some tolerance for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have an outlet. And so when you don't have an outlet, I found that my tolerance level was so low for anything. But,
right.
but having an outlet increased my ability to be able to deal with the just general life, because the person who's upset about their dry cleaning is going to be upset about their dry cleaning. And
mm-hmm.
you are not going to be able to hear it. But in order to continue to have relationships with people, you still do have to be able to hear and, you know, deal on a somewhat superficial level sometimes. And I just did not have the ability to do it until I had another space. And that space could be where I dealt with everything that was huge and important. And that gave me the ability to kind of still be able to, you know, manage when other people who were not in my space, and I was grateful for them that they weren't in my space, you know.
Right.
It was so painful. I wouldn't have wished it on my worst enemy. And so being able to still participate in life on a level that allowed people to be where they were and didn't require them to be where I was also a benefit that I didn't initially recognize, but later came to really value about having a widowed community.
Yes, and because when you step out of life, just because you don't want to hear all of that chatter,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can cocoon yourself in such a place that might not be very healthy for yourself also.
Yeah, for sure. And also, you know, it changes your relationships because people mm-hmm. around you have a really hard time, especially further down the grief path. You know, so they're very patient with you in the beginning, but as time goes on and they feel, for whatever their reasons, that you should be better by now, then it becomes really difficult because you're not better. And you then sort of feel that you don't have the ability to say, you know, what the truth is because they don't want to hear it. And so, again, having that outlet for your truth and being able to just let people be where they are in your life allowed you, me, to still continue to have a relationship with a variety of people who, you know, just weren't where I was in terms of what the deep stuff of life was. But I had people there, so that was okay with me. They could be wherever they were. Anybody could be wherever they were because I still had my outlet. I still had my space for being what I needed to be in order to walk down the healing path. You can't heal through grief until you have, you know, really walked it. You have to walk it, and that's just all there is to it.
And so many people try to jump it, you know, and say, well, that's not me. I'm going to go about my next day, and everything's going to be fine. And I think if you jump some of those steps, they will hit you in the face in another time when you least expect it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, the thing is that I don't blame anybody for wanting to avoid
right.
it. You know, it's a really, really pain. I think that more than just the pain is the idea that it's forever. And so because the loss is forever, I think we begin to feel that the pain is at that level forever. And that's what makes people run, because how could I deal with this for the rest of my life?
Right.
But, you know, walking through it is it's like carrying something really heavy. Initially, it feels like there's just no way you can handle the weight. But eventually, after much carrying, it becomes lighter because you become stronger. And so you become able to carry the weight in a different way. And before you know it, it's lighter in ways that you didn't expect. And because it happens so, you know, minutely, one little second, one little step at a time, you don't realize how far you've come until you turn back and think, wow, you know, actually, I've come a really long way. But I know that initially what scares people is the thought of forever and this pain forever. And again, I keep coming back to what the widowed community has done for me and what I've watched it do so many times for other people, and that's just prove that it doesn't hurt the same forever. It doesn't hurt to the same level forever. Yes, it hurts forever that the person that you love is no longer here. That's absolutely true. But that's just a reflection of how much they're loved. You miss them. That's a natural reaction. Of course you miss them. And of course it hurts that they're not here for the holiday or the birthday or the wedding or the birth of a baby. But eventually the love that you have for the person you've lost becomes the bigger piece. You know, that becomes the part where you are able to look back and smile and be grateful for that person in your life, for the lessons that person taught you, for the memories you have with that person, for the ways that person has impacted you and the people around you. Eventually, the love sort of outshines the missing. And it's not, and right now in the beginning, the missing outshines the love. And so, you know, slowly that sort of sun, you know, transfers. And so where you find yourself is able to carry it because it doesn't feel like such a burden. Instead, it feels like a blessing.
I think also the age does make a difference because when you're elderly, you expect it. You know, you knew it was coming or you felt that it would be coming.
I think
and when you're much younger.
It definitely does make a difference. I think the flip side of that, though, is that when you're older, that person truly is your whole life. Like, you
yes.
can't remember a time they were not in your life. And it's a very difficult thing to imagine what your life will be like without that person because you're literally 55 years of your life have been as a partner to that person. And who are you without that? You know, this history is so long and rich. So, you know, I think they each have their own unique challenges. I know that for young widowed people, they're told many, many times that it's going to be a, you know, you'll find somebody else. You know,
right.
So you're young, you're going to find someone else. And so it's, you know, there's, and for the on the flip side, you know, older people, there's an assumption that they don't need anyone else. So they're never going to need anyone else and that everyone's just sort of waiting until their day comes too. And so
right.
each age group has sort of their own unique road to travel. But it's so interesting how I did an interview with a woman who was 70, and I thought we would have nothing in common. And there were so many times we were finishing each other's sentences. It was beautiful and really taught me to understand that this common experience of grief is a place we can come together sort of regardless of anything else that might separate us or things that we think would separate us or put us into a different category. When you're dealing with this sort of loss, there's so much commonality in figuring it out and dealing with it day to day. We have a lot to offer each other, and I think that creates a very unique and powerful community.
Well, Michelle, I'm so thankful that you were my guest today because I know it's coming up on the holidays again, and so many people find that if they have not paid attention to themselves and the process and where they are, or if they have been stuffing it, and you know, or even if something does happen around the holidays, you know, you always keep your mind just keeps coming back to different paths and processes and things that happened in the past. And you know, on your website, a lot of people can reach out, so I would encourage everyone to check out the website. And if you could give us more information, Michelle, about the website
yeah.
and about the camp and the foundation
Absolutely.
And all the tools so that everybody will be able to click on and be able to find more help.
So the one other thing to mention is that throughout the holiday season, Soaring Spirits will be doing holiday hope tips is what we call it,
mm-hmm.
to help anyone grieving the loss of someone they love kind of manage the holiday season because it can be a really difficult time for people who miss somebody so much.
Mm-hmm.
And that is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/soaringspirits, all one word, all lowercase. Our website is sslf.org, and from that website you will be able to be taken to every one of the programs I mentioned. The Pen Pal program is there. The Camp Widow program is there. Our Newly Widowed checklist is there. We also have a blog that we write 7 days a week. A widowed person writes on every day of the week about their experience of widowhood right now. So wherever they are in the process, they talk about that every day. Again, you'll find that on the website. So if you go to sslf.org and click on our programs, you will find every single one of the things I talked about there. We also have an extensive resource page, which will take you to all sorts of different support sites for any grief-related support, including the loss of a child, the loss of a sibling, just general grief support for any sort of loss at all. And you will find all of that on the sslf.org under the resource tab.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest today, Michelle. I know there's a lot of tips that you were able to give us, but also more than ever, it's giving us the connection to have others be able to go to these pages and find support there when maybe just listening to maybe someone else that has already experienced it versus just listening to different family members, maybe that one connection that you need. So thank you so much for today.
Well, I appreciate it so much. It was a pleasure. It went by in lightning fast.
Yes, doesn't it? If anyone would like to know more information about Michelle and the Soaring Spirits Loss Foundation, that link is available on the show page. You just click right through there, and you will get directly to the site. And everything we've spoken about today is accessed there. Thank you so much for being with us today. And this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow.